Coming up on this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast, Carl and Jason dive into one of the best elements of the Star Wars films, the music of John Williams. We talk favorite character themes, favorite battle music, and so much more. So sit back, relax, and watch out for Wampas.
Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClaire and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 87, A Symphony of Favorites. I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me we have the General Crix Maydeen to my General Carlos Ryken. We have Carl LeClaire.
I'm the spy, you're the organized one. What up? an assault team will deactivate the shield generator. I like, Ryken has a cool first name, though. Carlist.
Carlist.
Yeah, it's so great. But then again, so is Crix.
Yes. I know you've said you love Crix.
The name I do. Crix, I do so love I the name like, Crix. I'm totally going to have a middle named kid named Crix someday.
That would be pretty awesome.
This is my son, Anakin Crix LeClaire. And Jason would be like, nice. Oh, I'd like to introduce you to my son, Jar Jar Jake Lloyd Hunt.
Oh, my Lord. No.
Just to piss Joe Hogan off, I should actually name my kid. This is my son, Joe Hogan Jar Jar LeClaire.
Just so Joe and Jar Jar are together forever in a name.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes. Very nice.
But anywho, we have a fun episode planned for tonight. We're going to be talking some of our favorite Star Wars music themes. We obviously did an episode a while back about kind of like our top five songs in Star Wars. But there's so much Star Wars music that you can do so much more with it. And so tonight we're going to be just kind of, we kind of came up with some categories of different styles of music throughout Star Wars. And we're going to tell you our favorite songs from each of these categories that we made up. It's going to be fun. It's going to be really fun. But before we get into that, we have a really fun matchup given to us by Joe Hogan, who was on our last episode, where he came up with the idea of one Wampa versus five armed Ewoks. So, Jason, I'm going to give you that, the mic for the Larian responses.
Alrighty then, and I just want to give out a quick little warning for those that are Ewok lovers. A few of these descriptions may be graphic may include graphic Ewok violence. That warning is specifically for you, Teresa Delgado.
rated EH for Ewok hate.
Oh dear.
Oh no.
Oh boy.
There it is.
All right, let's get into this. On Facebook, James Southard says Ewoks in the end. Ewoks in the end, but at least some of them get killed. Kind of like when ancient humans hunted a mammoth. They get the kill, but usually with someone dying. Brian V. Klein. Ewoks are pretty good hunters, so I'd say they'd take down the Wampa, but not without some casualties of their own. Jimmy Phillips. I have to side with the previous comments. The little guys are carnivorous. After all, they were getting ready to cook our heroes. So they pull out all of their hunting prowess against the Wampa and win out in the end, alibi with some casualties. Yohei Valry. Says, definitely Ewoks. Zach Williams. Well, I don't know if this would ever happen because, well, let's face it, a Wampa would be out of its natural environment as well as the Ewoks. But I think what would happen is the Wampa would be overmatched by the Ewoks with their primitive weapons just in time for Jason and Carl to arrive and help their friend. And then the Wampa, Carl, and Jason will sit down for a Star Trek and Doctor Who marathon. Something like that, possibly. So I'll give that one to the Wampa, since we all win, I guess. Matthew Mark says, a Wampa versus five-armed Ewoks? Did the Ewoks grow extra arms due to radiation exposure from the second Death Star? Oh, five Ewoks, and they are armed, no hyphen. Well, I hate to say it because he's so cute, but I don't think Wicket will make it out of this fight alive based on his little sling demonstration in Return of the Jedi. He knocks himself out with his own weapon, and the Wampa goes to finish him. While the Wampa is busy eating Wicket, sorry, the other four Ewoks crush the Wampa's head between two logs. Ewoks win. I feel so heartless describing an Ewok's death, but you did this to me, Carl and Jason. You did this. Actually, I put the blame on Joe Hogan. Christopher Sangnetta says, I say the Ewok's weapons wouldn't penetrate the Wampa's hide, and he'd crush them. Blasters on full will only stun a Wampa, and only lightsabers have been shown to cut them. Plus, Wampa has speed in the open terrain. Now, if we're talking Ewok siege weapons, the Wampa has the advantage on the open plain and can even use boulders to down gliders. But in a forest, the Ewoks could lure the Wampa into ambushes and traps, logs, and boulders. But I'll give that one to the Wampa as well. Phil Johnston says, I'll pick the Wampa. He'd pick up all five in one go and bite the head off each one at a time. Paul Gann says, I see the Ewoks tripping the Wampa with a rope and trying to stab it with stone spears and knives. Unfortunately, I just see the Wampa getting angry and eating the Ewoks. Vader Dave Maul says, the Wampa. Ewoks will piss in their fur at the sight of the Wampa, and it's a no-brainer. Mike Mankoff says, Ewoks, because they have weapons. It would be close, though, because Wampas are pretty tough. That one survived getting its arm cut off by Luke and rose to become king of the Wampas. It's in the EU, or Legends EU, if you will. Jeffrey Beaumont says, Wampa! The Ewoks, even with the cleverness of Willow, a.k.a. Wicket, they do not stand a chance. Easily scared, they do not run fast and a fish out of water if out in the open. Fight better in forests only. The Wampa would get hurt, but will win with a full belly with leftovers. And Renee Tajima Bierre says, Ewoks! They know how to use weapons, so they would win without a casualty. Christopher Jenkins says, if it's on Hoth, Ewoks get hypothermia and Wampa gets dinner. If it's on Endor, Ewoks have a shot, but I think the Wampa wins. The Ewoks' weapons aren't strong enough to bring down the Wampa before he brings down the Ewoks. The Wampa could be maimed or dead by the end, but he takes all the Ewoks first. Jonathan Michael Reeves says, my four-year-old son, Evan Reeves, is a huge Wampa fan, Wampa's Lair fan, and thinks the Ewoks will win. He says the Ewoks would win because they're so hungry. I would agree with this, given the Ewoks' exposure to advanced technology and the surplus Imperial tech lying around Endor, the Wampa has no chance. I'm going to give that one two votes for Ewoks, since is Jonathan and his son, Evan. Two more on Twitter, at King on 9 Cubits says, if Ewoks can capture a Jedi, then a Wampa is no problem. And we finally got an email from, I believe this is Lenny, I hope I pronounced that right, or Lenny? I think it's Lenny, though. Says, I think the battle will go like this. The Ewoks will throw their spears, and even if they hit their mark, the Wampa will be undeterred. The Wampa will run up to the lead Ewok, bite its head off, and keep it in its mouth. He will throw the remaining carcass at another Ewok, knocking it unconscious. The Wampa will then jump on top of the unconscious Ewok. This leaves three left. The Wampa will turn to them, crush the Ewok head in its mouth, so the brain matter will spray all over the remaining Ewoks, shocking them and maybe blinding them. Then he will grab all three, hug them, and bear hug them to death. He will then sell them as hot dog meat to the local market. The Ewok's main advantage seems to be the terrain, hiding in trees and underbrush, and on neutral terrain without trees and such, they're sitting ducks. The Wampa is strong and has enough entrance and agility to outmaneuver his little-legged adversaries to win. That one was slightly graphic. Ugh. Anyways, but that gives us a final tally, Larian tally, of 8 for the Wampa and 10 for our 5 furry Ewoks. Carl, what say you?
Wait, well, it was 8 to 10, right?
8 to 10 in favor of the Ewoks.
Yeah, I was really surprised by that. This is a tough one for me, to be honest, because I love my Ewoks, but I also love a good Wampa. And again, that like the premise was, again, this is on neutral ground, whatever that might mean, because that's probably not really possible. But they're both hunters. You know, a Wampa is a predator. It's a hunter. It knows how to hunt just like the Ewok does. I'm going to give it to the Wampa. I mean, as a member of the Wampa's Lair, it's my duty. And the reason I think a Wampa would win, again, on neutral ground, is while they're both good hunters, I think they would be equally matched as far as, like, the hunting ability goes. But when it comes to just, you know, I mean, we're talking Ewok typical weapons. We're not talking what they acquired after Return of the Jedi. You know, if they took on blasters and stuff, of course they would win the blasters. But where there's typical, like, bows and arrows and spears, I think that the Wampa hide is strong enough that it'll certainly, like, stick in it. It'd be like you shooting at a bear with a .22 or something. Like, it's going to hurt it, but it's just going to piss it off even more. So I think, you know, the Wampa would just overwhelm them with size and ferocity and strength. Like, Ewoks aren't very fast and nimble. So I think he would catch up to them and just kind of maul them all down. So I got to give it to the Wampa. But what do you think?
I thought this one was close. And I was going back and forth on it, you know, over and over and over, trying to figure out who I would think would win, because I think the Ewoks, they have an advantage in the fact that they're more intelligent, at least, you know, they're more sentient thinkers, and so they might be able to strategize a bit more. But the Wampa is semi-sentient, and he's three times their size and a lot more agile. But, of course, there's five Ewoks, one of him. So I was going back and forth on this, and I finally was like, okay, if we ran this matchup 100 times, I think it would probably – I think the Wampa would win about 55 of those 100, and the Ewoks would win 45 of those. So just, you know, Ewoks – the Ewoks could get a lucky shot in, you know, sometimes. But I think at the end of the day, if you're going to run it that many times, and, you know, at the ultimately, I think the Wampa has the slight edge here just due to the agility and size and ferocity that the Wampa has. And that it – in the fact that it is a more intelligent predator than most of the creatures out there, the most other, you know, beasts in Star Wars out there. Yeah. So I'm going to – by the slimmest of margins, sorry, Teresa, I'm going to have to give it to the Wampa here. But, and this is a rarity here in the Wampa's Lair, that leaves us with a tie, a 10-10 tie. So the last time that happened was between Joe Hogan and Jar Jar Binks.
yeah.
And it's Joe's own fault. So,
yep.
But yeah, so that was pretty cool, and I was really intrigued to see all of the different responses we got, and especially at the beginning, the amount of people that were, you know, giving it to the Ewoks. So
yeah, initially, all the responses, I was like, "What? Really? Really?"
I was like, "This is going to be a blowout," but then we got some others and. But yeah, it was just weird at first. So
yeah, and that's why I love doing this, because everybody has a different perspective, which I appreciate.
Exactly. And like I said, this is a really close one, and there's always the chance that Ewoks could get a lucky shot in and take the Wampa down. But at the end of the day, I have to give it just a slight edge to the Wampa.
Yeah.
So that's why I went Wampa. So
yeah.
Anywho.
Yes.
Well, we've got another fun matchup at the end of the show, and if you've already heard. Our last show, where Joe Hogan made a surprise appearance at the end, then you have a good idea of what the matchup will be. But we will save that until the end of the show.
Yes.
So, but Carl, our topic here was inspired by you taking a little trip to the symphony this past week.
It is, yes. Woman that goes to the church I work at works for the Boston Pops, and she was telling me about this concert coming up, which it was basically just going to be like a tribute to sci-fi night. And they were playing Gustav Holst's The Planet, which is my favorite orchestral piece of all time, for part of it. And then they were going to play like sci-fi themed music. So like some stuff from Star Trek, some stuff from Star Wars, some stuff from a couple other things. And Leonard Nimoy, Nimoy?
I think I pronounce it Nimoy.
Okay, Leonard Nimoy was going to be there to narrate.
Yes, the original Spock.
The original Spock, which I'm sure almost everybody knows that. But
right.
It was a really cool event. So first off, we show up. She got me a bunch of tickets, so I went with a few of my closest friends, which was great. We were like pretty much front and center. She worked nice. There, so she got us some pretty sweet seats.
Nice.
And it was really cool too, because as they were doing the planets element, they had this big screen lowered down over the orchestra, and they had like pictures from like NASA probes and stuff of all these different planets. So it was really cool. And I'm like fascinated by like astronomy and all that stuff, even though I literally know nothing about it. But it was so cool. I mean, the music was just breathtakingly beautiful. Like just such a great experience. And what I thought was funny is also Leonard Nimoy was he's really funny. He's a really good narrator. Like he did a fantastic job. And you'd think with having him as the narrator, they would close out with a Star Trek song. But nope, they played like two Star Trek songs together, and then they played four Star Wars songs to close the night, which was pretty cool. They did the main theme, of course. They did Vader's theme. They did the throne room song. And then they came back and did an encore and played the Cantina Band song.
Oh, nice.
But I will say the Cantina Band song was a little – I don't know. There's obviously some studio work done with that particular song, understandably so. Because it didn't sound – it sounded good. It just – it didn't have the same oomph as it does, you know, in the original recording. But I've never been a huge fan of Darth Vader's theme, the Imperial March. I don't dislike it, but it's never been one of my favorites. But hearing that was awesome. They just nailed that live. It was – so anyway, yeah. I mean, it was just an awesome concert experience. And as I was leaving Symphony Hall that night, it was just like – oh, we haven't come up with what we want to do for topic this coming week. We've got to do something music-oriented. And John Williams is going to be there conducting the BC Pops the entire first week of June. That woman's going to try and get me some tickets. But she said it's obviously nice. Very popular shows, so she's going to see what she can do. But obviously seeing those posters as I was leaving as well, hearing Star Wars music as I left, I'm like, we got to do something Star Wars music-oriented. So this is what we're doing. And again, like I don't typically go to obviously orchestra type concerts, not because I dislike that music. It's just not something I usually think to go to. And it was just awesome. It was really cool. And there was a lot of the music. There was a couple songs that they played I had never heard of before. And they were just absolutely beautiful. They did do like the theme music they did. They did the E.T. theme song, which is good. There was a lot of John Williams that night. they did.
Yeah, he does a lot of Gustav Holst inspired sci-fi themes.
Yeah. And there was also 2001 A Space Odyssey, and then they did Star Trek stuff, and then they did Star Wars stuff. So it was great. It was such an awesome show.
Nice.
But anyway, we're going to get into our topic and talk about some of our favorite music. And of course, if we're going to do a list here on the Wampas Lair, of course we have to do an honorable mention or two.
Yes, two.
But my first honorable mention, Jason, and because I will say that my list is OT heavy, which I'm not shocked by, but I want to be clear right now. I love the PT soundtracks. They're so incredible. But just based on some of the stuff we picked tonight, I do happen to have a lot of OT stuff. But my first honorable mention is a PT song. It's from Revenge of the Sith. The song is titled Anakin's Dark Deeds. This is the song, I mean, that's playing essentially when Obi-Wan and Yoda go back to the temple, and it's constantly being intercut with, you know, their discovery of all the dead Jedi, intercut with, you know, Sidious becoming Emperor, and then intercut with Anakin destroying everybody on Mustafar. And it's just such a beautiful song that, like, it really builds in intensity. John Williams has a great way of capturing, specifically in the Revenge of the Sith soundtrack, he really does have a tragic soundtrack. Like, this feel of this music is tragic, and it's very epically tragic. And I love the way that it is, specifically at the end, the way the song ends, right towards the end, like, and you have the shot then. Again, John Williams is so good about, not only is his music beautiful and it tells a story in and of itself, but usually, you know, when you hear it in light of what you're also watching, I love the way it builds to right before it ends, and it, you know, kind of zooms in on Anakin standing on that walkway, and he's like kind of crying, which I still don't know exactly why he's crying. I mean, I guess maybe because he's disappointed and he's the fact that he's become a murderer. You know, it's just such a beautiful shot and such a beautiful song. So that's my first honorable mention.
Probably.
Yeah, makes sense, right?
Yeah, makes sense, you know. But I was going to save this for my second honorable mention, but since you mentioned it, this is also an honorable mention for me. Is Anakin's dark deeds.
Dude likes his dark deeds. the song could be called ADD, Anakin's Dark Deeds. It's just a little slow.
It's a really beautiful piece. And of course, the part in the movie where it plays is, you know, where everything starts just turning. You know, it's the tipping point for Sidious, and everything is going his way. It's even something that I just love listening to on its own without the music or the movie to go with it. It's a beautiful piece, and my favorite part is the trading off between the big choral portions and then the strings going at it with the very, you know, deliberate beat that they take there between it, you know, as you go back and forth between Anakin slaughtering and Palpatine's, you know, rise to the Empire speech, you know. It's just amazing. It's a brilliant piece of music and one of my favorites from the Revenge of the Sith soundtrack. And I used my honorable mentions to make sure I hit soundtracks that didn't make it into my list for the other categories. So this is my only Revenge of the Sith piece here, but every other soundtrack in Star Wars is represented in some way on my list. So
nice.
That'd be awesome.
I don't think I've represented everything. Nope, I have. This is my only Revenge of the Sith song too, though.
Yeah.
Which, again, I mean, it's a fantastic soundtrack. This is just the one that it deserves a mention.
And right.
I think I mentioned one of them in our top five ones, because I do, but just for the particular categories we have tonight.
Right, exactly. There, and can't wait for you guys to hear what those categories are. But before we get there, we have one more honorable mention each, don't we, Mr.
Yes,
McClare?
We do. And this is one of my all-time favorite songs. It just didn't fit into any of the categories. But it's called The Rebel Fleet. It's the closing song from The Empire Strikes Back. And I love this song because, again, it's just so beautiful and it's so hopeful. That's the reason, like, I think a lot of people do really love The Empire Strikes Back is because it ends on this absolute crap note. Like, everything terrible has happened, yet they hold on to this hope. And that music really captures that feeling of hoping. And they intercut, you know, the Han Solo, Princess Leia love theme is slipped in there as well to indicate to me that romance is not over, that there is still hope that this is going to be rekindled. And it's just, I don't know, it's just a very comforting piece of music. And it's a very comforting scene. You know, Luke's in these comfy hospital clothes, Leia's in a comfortable white clothes, everybody's in white. And, you know, he just wraps.
And Lando is stolen.
Lando's a total klepto and permanently borrows his buddy's clothes. It's a warm scene. Even though everything utterly bad has happened, there's this piece of music, though, that tells you it's going to be okay. It almost matches, you know, the part when Lando says, and I think the Force theme does, it's hinted at quietly as Lando says, "Princess will find Han, I promise." Like, it's just this statement of, yes, it'll be okay. And this music perfectly captures that feeling. So that's why it's one of my favorite pieces of all Star Wars, but it gets an honorable mention as it doesn't fit into any of our categories.
Very nice. That's a really nice theme. It's not one that I go to for, like, you know, ending music from Star Wars. It's obviously there's a lot more that are very, you know, either more memorable or more dynamic.
Sure.
But it is a very beautiful theme. So
I know that was a category I was actually going to add today. I was going to shoot you a message, just be like, hey, we should do favorite ending song. But it's like, we've got enough.
We've got enough. Yes. We've already extended the list. You know,
right.
I'm altering the list. Yeah. Pray I don't alter it any further. but my last honorable mention is actually from the Clone Wars soundtrack, and I wanted to just give a little shout shout out to the Clone Wars soundtrack because Kevin Kiner does a very good job. It's definitely in a different style than Star Wars. But the piece that I picked from the Clone Wars soundtrack is titled Anakin versus Dooku, and it's the music from the movie where Anakin fights Count Dooku, and it's
the title doesn't give that away or anything.
it's a pretty self-explanatory title, but it's on Tatooine. It takes place on Tatooine, and so you know Dooku's able to goad Anakin about returning home and senses strong feelings of pain and loss and all that stuff before he reveals that he's got Ahsoka trapped by his Magna Guards. Near Jabba's palace, but the music there is actually really neat. It's kind of different from most of the music from the rest of the movie. There's a driving drum beat that happens throughout most of it, but other than that, it's probably the most Star Wars sounding piece from that soundtrack. The way that the strings and the horns work together, and there's even some choral bits, light choral bits in there as well. But the way that it all just works together, it's probably the most John Williams inspired original pieces from the Clone Wars soundtrack from the movie. So that's why I really like it, and it's one of my favorites from the soundtrack. Just wanted to make sure to give an honorable mention there, and I'm excited that Kevin Kiner is returning for Star Wars Rebels. So,
I didn't care for the Clone Wars music in general, like the show or the movie, because just to me it didn't feel like Star Wars. But then as I got more immersed into the Clone Wars, I realized that it's meant to have a different feel because it's a different tale in a sense. I mean, it's still in that same universe, and he's still very good about using particular theme music on occasion. Like I loved, In the episode where Sidious fights Maul and Savage, when he uses the Emperor's theme as he approaches, yes. It's awesome. It's so good, and I like that too because it is kind of like a different tale. But then you're always going to get these little insertions of the bigger tale that we are all familiar with. So, he's very good at that. Real quick, I was just thinking too with this Rebel Fleet song. It's my favorite song to play when I fail at something. So like I remember like a month ago, like I was like going for a heavy weight on something in the gym and I didn't get it. And it's like it's such a disheartening feeling when you're training for something and you don't get it. Uh-huh. I'm like listening to my iPod obviously in the gym, and I immediately like stop listening to like all my pump up workout music, aka the Backstreet Boys, and. And like I turned on the Rebel Fleet music. I'm like, I'm gonna get it next time. So, anywho, but let's get into our topics. How about that?
Our categories. This is gonna be exciting.
Everything is going as planned. That wasn't that bad for me.
No, it was pretty good.
Yeah, I'll be nice to you, Carl. Anyway, so
it's better than some of the ones I've heard. So
great. I'm getting better then. That's improvement. I'll take
it. Yes. I'm not saying better than some of yours. Some of the other ones I've heard from other people. You're like, better than other people.
Hey. Anywho, so our first category we're going to get into tonight is our favorite character theme. For me, Jason, my favorite character theme is Yoda's theme. Off of the Empire Strikes Back soundtrack.
I'm shocked.
Right? I mean, this is the first one that immediately popped in my head, and I'm pretty sure this was my favorite song on our top five. It is my favorite song. It's my favorite Star Wars song. I love this piece of music. It still will give me chills, depending on like when and where I'm listening to it. Because it so perfectly, beautifully captures Yoda's character. It's like this very mystical, mysterious music that's also very gentle, and I like that. There's this gentleness to his theme song that matches the Yoda we meet in The Empire Strikes Back, but it's also like this very sophisticated piece of music that to me it really does. It really feels like it's connected to nature, which I think Yoda is very much so in The Empire Strikes Back. It's a very transcendent theme song that perfectly matches Yoda. Now, I do want to mention, I'm cheating a little bit here, Jason, I'm sorry, but just because I got to get the Phantom Menace is one of my favorite soundtracks of all Star Wars.
Yes.
And I don't have anything specifically in here, except I am going to give a quick little honorable mention to my runner-up theme is Anakin's theme from the Phantom Menace.
Oh, cool.
I love that song. It perfectly captures the innocence of Anakin Skywalker in Episode One. It's a very beautiful, playful song. And then obviously the really cool homage at the end to Darth Vader's theme is very mm-hmm. expertly done. But yeah, Yoda's theme is definitely my favorite character theme. So
very cool. Yeah, I'm not surprised at all. I had that pegged for you. So
I have my silly one pegged for you, but I want to see if I'm actually right.
Well, we'll see. But yeah, no, the Yoda's theme is beautiful, and that was one of the ones I was considering for this. But I went with something else.
Of course.
And I actually went with the Imperial March, Darth Vader's theme.
Interesting.
This is my only Empire Strikes Back pick on here, but I picked it because in addition to the way it's used for Darth Vader, it also is so iconic for the Empire, and it gets used in so many other little homages, especially in throughout the prequels, particularly in the end of Attack of the Clones, and then a little bit in Revenge of the Sith. Mm-hmm. And so just the overall use of that piece and the way it's used, and honestly one of my favorite uses of the Imperial March is at the end of Attack of the Clones when we see the clone army loading up off of Coruscant, and it's amazing. It's sort of a regal interpretation of mm-hmm. the scary Darth Vader theme, you know, the theme that spells doom. So it's regal doom.
And yeah.
You know, and it fits the moment so well. But you know, that and all the other,
I like that other
times that it's played in the.
I like that you picked a song here from The Empire Strikes Back, but apply it to Attack of the Clones.
Well, it's
can't
used
wait for
there,
Joe Hogan's response expertly. To that.
Oh, I know. But it's used there expertly. So
it is absolutely.
But just the classic Imperial March is fantastic and amazing. So, I was able to wiggle that one as my favorite character theme for Star Wars. So
I will say I'm really surprised by that.
What was your silly guess?
Jar Jar's theme.
Oh, well,
I actually do really like Jar Jar's theme though.
It's a
fun piece of music.
Uh huh. And for some reason, when I was going through this, I didn't think of the Emperor's theme until you mentioned it just a few minutes ago.
That's a good
one. Oh,
it's so eerie. So eerie.
It's so good too.
And you know, I'm so happy with Darth Vader's theme too, because the theme that we get for Darth Vader from A New Hope is like, it's, I don't know, like it doesn't do it for, like the music from A New Hope is so much different than Empire and Jedi soundtrack. I mean, right. They all have their own distinct feels as well, but I feel like they're much closer together than mm-hmm. A New Hope. A New Hope's, especially Imperial themes, is just so different.
Yeah.
It's immensely better.
Right. A New Hope is like a foundation for the music.
Yeah.
That John Williams went, okay, now I see what we're going for. Let's take it up a notch.
Exactly.
And he took it up five.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And it's so, I mean, and when the first time we hear it, you know, when Han Solo is reporting to Echo Base that they're probably going to be in trouble, it's a good bet the Empire knows we're here. And then, doom, doom, doo, 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 doom. You know, and like,
it's just, you see these
Star Destroyers getting overshadowed. You're like, what the, what is that?
What is that shadow? Oh my God. That is the biggest Star Destroyer ever. And it was so, but it's great. So yeah. I had to use it. I had to have that as my favorite. So
that's a good one.
Character
good
theme.
So. It was really cool hearing it live too. I'd never. Oh yes, I saw it in Star Wars in concert. But
Star Wars. John Williams needs to do another tour, or Anthony Daniels needs to do another tour of that.
Yes.
Again.
Yeah. What if they had Ahmed Best do it? This is a song from Jar Jar Binks.
I think he'd be a good host.
I'm sure he would, actually.
You know, not as Jar Jar Binks, obviously,
right.
But as Ahmed Best. I think he'd actually do pretty good as a host of that, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, they could probably get, you know, any number of people that would love to host that thing. But Anthony Daniels is kind of just perfect, so.
You know who I think would be really fun to do as a host? Mark Hamill. I think Mark Hamill would be a really good host for that.
That would be cool.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
But anyway, shall we go to our next category?
Yes.
I like this one. Or should I say, I love this one?
Aww.
Because it's our favorite love theme. Ayo. But for me, and again, this is on it's in my top five Star Wars songs. It's Across the Stars from Attack of the Clones. I love this piece of music. And again, I think, you know, I remember when John Williams was explaining this piece of music when it first came out, he said he really wanted to capture that feeling of forbidden love. There's a regal beauty. I like that word you use, Jason. I'm stealing it. But there's this like regal beauty to Across the Stars, but there is this sense of doomedness. I don't know if that's not a word, but
foreboding.
Exactly. There is, as much as it's beautiful, it lacks, I don't know, that real feeling of commitment or whatever. I don't know. It perfectly captures this confused, incomplete love that Anakin and Padme have. I don't know. It's such a beautiful piece of music. Maybe I enjoy it so much too because of the fact that it just, it speaks to this feeling of like the goodness of love, but at the same time, it's a love that's not quite fully understood. Mm-hmm. I love this song. So it's hard to say why. Again, whenever I think of like my top music for anything, it's hard to explain why. You just do. You just love it because it makes specifically Yoda's theme and Across the Stars, which were both the top of my list on our episode about music. But these are hard to explain why I like. It's just the way they make me feel. Yoda's theme, if I close my eyes, I feel like I'm on Dagobah, which I love. And I feel like I'm in the presence of this spiritual master. When I hear Across the Stars, I just feel like I'm falling in love. It just like all over my body. It just feels like I'm falling in love. And like most women in my life, they're going to hurt me. Oh, but yeah, I mean, it's just, I feel it. I feel it in my gut. And that's what I love about that song. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the thing with music is that there's a lot of it. You can't explain why you like it a lot of the time. It's definitely a gut reaction. It's sort of this extra sensory thing that happens with people and music, and it's a really beautiful thing. And I honestly can't pick any other love song from Star Wars above Across the Stars. It is my favorite.
Are we
it's
on the my same favorite. Page?
Yes, we're on the same page on this
gosh.
One.
Oh, my gosh!
Which I kind of guessed, but...
Okay. I honestly didn't know where you'd go with this one. I was really looking forward to it. So,
but yeah, no, this one is so beautiful. And while Han and Leia have a nice little love theme, it's based off of Princess Leia's theme, her own personal theme. So, I don't know if it catches the two of them together as well as Across the Stars does, but you know, Across the Stars, especially the full version of it on the soundtrack is just absolutely gorgeous. It's one of the most gorgeous pieces of music John Williams has written for Star Wars. It starts off real light and everything, and we ultimately get to this big sweeping, you know, the whole symphony is involved with it, and then it, you know, goes down to something ominous, you know, right before the harps take over at the end to repeat the theme, you know, and it's really beautiful the way that it all flows together and works together, and it's a captivating piece. Mm-hmm. It's just there's no other word for it. It's captivating and it's beautiful, and it really, you know, stands out as one of the best of that kind of music that I've heard. You know, any sort of love theme from any movie, you know. It's a lot of really cheesy love themes from other movies out there. And John Williams is anything but cheesy.
Yeah.
So,
it's
amazing. So, yeah.
And I know I specifically love the use of it during, it's in the song Padme's Ruminations in the Revenge of the Sith soundtrack, but, you know, as Anakin's looking out over. And right before he leaves, you do, you, It's so expertly fit in there, like right as that tear falls down his cheek, which I love that scene. But I love it too because that's like you have this ominous music as Palpatine's like whispering in his head. But he looks across as he's trying to make up his mind about what to do. And they use Across the Stars as almost like this is his motivation. This is why he's about to do what he's going to do because of his love for Padme. I mean, it's just – it's expertly put in there. So I like that. By the way, real quick, I'm cheating again. I really want to just give a quick little mention to one of my favorite love themes, and we again, because we always think of love as obviously just romantic love, but is Luke and Leia's theme from Return of the Jedi. That's a love theme. It's a brother and sister love, but it's love all the same. And that's one of my favorite pieces of music as well. It's a close second to Across the Stars for love music. I like it more than the Han and Leia's theme for the reasons you kind of said. It's really Princess Leia's theme with a variation thereof. But yeah,
cool.
Let's go into our favorite duel music. Let's go from love to violence.
Yes.
Yes.
That's the way we do this here.
Yes. That's usually the way my relationships go. Not physical violence. Let me be aware. Let me make that statement. Indeed. But favorite. You can't talk Star Wars music and not talk duel music. I mean, hello. Right.
Let me just clarify here, folks. Yeah. We started out with just battle music, but there's so much action-y music in Star Wars that we had to split it between duels and battles. Yes. So don't worry. We'll get to some of your battle stuff in just a minute, but we're going to start with the duels.
Yes. So my favorite duel music is actually – it's from the Battle of Endor 2. Track on the Return of the Jedi soundtrack starting at 5:03. It's the start of when Luke loses his control and attacks Darth Vader. Now, I know what a lot of you are probably thinking is like, whoa, we have all these great duel music in the prequels, which we do. Duel of the Fates is fantastic. Battle of the Heroes, it's great. But nothing captures the... this piece of music is not even a minute long, probably. Maybe a little over a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But it just... it perfectly captures what's going on. You know, because think of it this way. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Had to quaff. But this piece of music is capturing Luke losing his mind is really what's kind of going on there. They use a choir here. The only other time we've heard a choir in Star Wars music up to this point, obviously there's choirs utilized a lot in the PT soundtracks, but the only time we've ever heard a choir is for the Emperor's theme. And I think that's really interesting and that's obviously it's a theme of the evil character. They have this choir being brought in as Luke, in a sense, is essentially starting to fall to the dark side. They use this choir piece, I think, to capture this movement of the darkness. But at the same time, it doesn't have the same eerie feel. It's almost a tragic feel to it, like, oh no, Luke, don't do this. You know what I mean? But it so beautifully captures this evolving relationship of Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker. Every time they meet, you know, the duel music in Empire is really cool, but it's very it's very duely, it's very action-based. This one has a lot of emotional weight behind it because this fight is extremely emotional, specifically this part.
Right.
And it's really good, too, because even leading up to where Luke disarms Vader and then turns and says, you know, I'm a Jedi like my father before me, which is obviously one of my favorite lines in Star Wars. That's when we get the underscore of the Force theme there. That's kind of how this, to me, this duel music ends. It starts with this tragic piece of choir, and it ends, though, with a statement, a musical statement of who Luke is. He's not this Emperor character. Nice. He is a Jedi. He is one with the Force. So I love the way that piece is used. So that's my favorite duel music.
It's a really beautiful piece, and it's, you know, really unique amongst the duels in the fact that it's really not very dynamic or bombastic like a lot of the other duel music. It's very, I don't want to say ominous, but it is kind of ominous, and it's very much more emotionally based than action based, like you said. So it's a really good piece. It's not my pick, but it's a really good piece. And I had thought about that, and it was like, yeah, that's an interesting take on it. you know, but it's for me, when it comes to duels, nothing can stand up to Duel of the Fates.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that's a close second for me.
And Duel of the Fates, it was that piece, you know, the episode one soundtrack reimagined the way that we think about Star Wars music. Because, you know, because of how much of the choir it introduced and how integral that became to the story, and the different themes and the different way that it was used. And this was just the crowning achievement of the Phantom Menace soundtrack was the Duel of Fates, so much so that, of course, it shows up in every subsequent prequel. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see it show up in the sequel trilogy somehow, you know, maybe just a quick homage to it somewhere. But it's beautiful, it's action-packed, and it's exciting. And, you know, with these types of music, there's not a lot you can say about why you like it other than it's just exciting in the way it makes you feel. And it's, whenever I play it, I always feel a little bit more epic than I actually am. but I don't know. It gets me. It gets me pumped. It gets me excited. And I just love it. And it's, I had considered maybe Battle of the Heroes, but that, even though that's really good, it can't stand up to Duel of the Fates for me. Duel of the Fates is probably my favorite piece of music from the prequel trilogy, period. So there's no doubt as to why it ended up on my list here. So
yeah, it's really good, and also coupled with that really cool music video when it first came out in 99. I mean, it was awesome. I mean, that was my favorite. I would literally like put my head, I like when I had a Walkman, because, you know, iPods didn't exist when I was in 1999, but I had like a big clip for my belt, put my CD player Walkman on, put my headphones on, play Duel of the Fates, and grab my Qui-Gon Jinn plastic lightsaber and duel in the backyard for hours.
Nice.
Just with that, yes, song on repeat. I mean, it's such a great song, and obviously it's so good to me that it kind of overtakes Battle of the Heroes during the Anakin Obi-Wan duel in Revenge of the Sith, even. Mm-hmm. I mean, Duel of the Fates is playing almost an equal amount as Battle of the Heroes.
Duel of the Fates is used primarily with the Yoda Palpatine fight.
Right.
And so it's really neat to get the two of those together, playing together.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Incredibly awesome, fun piece of music. So.
Yes.
But let's go to our next category, our favorite battle music.
Yes.
For me, this is another piece from the Return of the Jedi soundtrack. It's off the piece, The Battle of Endor 1. Honestly, it's really right from the start of the song. I love this song as they're getting ready to go into battle, and especially at, yes, the 1 minute 9 second mark.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
Like, it's just like, it's.
You
it's,
have no idea.
I don't know if I can consider
how excited I'm getting just listening to you do that. Yes. That just makes me want to fly a starfighter into battle right now.
So, and that's the thing. Like, I'm letting this be my battle music because it is called the Battle of Endor. I mean, but it's right before the battle kind of begins. But it's mm-hmm. it's really cool. It's like this fun build up music because you know they're going to get the mission done. And right. I remember. Did you ever play the computer game Galactic Battlegrounds?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so you know you could like pick the different civilization you'd want to be if you were just doing a custom map. If you pick the Rebel Alliance, it would play like a quick theme piece, and that piece was. I used to just literally go back and click that over and over again. I was like, yes,
nice.
It's just such a fun piece of music. Like, that's what I want. If I ever have to go to battle someday, that's what I want in my head. That's what I should start listening to before I'm about to lift a heavy weight. It's so good. It's so good, and it leads right into the "it's a trap" part.
Right,
so. It's a trap. So yeah, I mean, again, this music, it has that feeling of preparation, of getting ready to go get it done. It's such a mission oriented piece of music, and it's really fun the way the strings play off each other and everything. I mean, it's a fun piece of music to get us ready for this big battle. So. That's my favorite piece of battle music.
Oh man, that's great. It was this close to being my pick. Literally that close to being my pick. But I picked something else from Return of the Jedi. And this isn't technically in the movie, but it is the Forest Battle concert suite that you get at the end of the Return of the Jedi soundtrack. And John Williams does a wonderful job of getting, you know, all the big themes of the Battle of Endor into this thing. And the way it's all structured, and it's fun, and it's exciting, and it's got some lighter moments, but then it's got these really big, dramatic moments. And then it's just, about a 4-minute piece, and the ending wrap-up is about a minute long. And he just keeps going and going and going and going and finally just ends it. And it's amazing, and I love it. And so, as of this moment right now, that is my favorite battle music, more than just a little bit above the beginning of the Return of the Jedi end battle stuff. Because, that whole shebang when it all goes down at the beginning, particularly, the first part of the battle there, that music is so exciting and so awesome. So, right now I have to put the Forest Battle concert suite there as my favorite. So it's exciting. It's a lot of fun. And it's just, I don't have any other words. It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the there's so much battle. I mean, because think about it. I mean, the majority of Star Wars movies are battle-esque type scenes and action-based scenes. So there's so much different battle music. But yeah, I mean, that's a good one. And I like how they did the concert suite too, because it's such a long piece, obviously all drawn out. But I think it's a fun way of like kind of condensing it into one track.
Right.
So.
Right. And sometimes, sometimes you would think that, taking bits and pieces and condensing it and, forming it together in one thing might detract from it. But I don't think it detracts at all. I think it makes it awesome. So,
yeah.
John Williams is an expert at rearranging his music to do what he wants with it. So
Completely agree.
So. Well, we've only got two more categories, don't we?
I know it. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
But our next category is our favorite source music. In other words, our favorite in-universe music. So songs you would hear being played in the film as if they're actually being played in the film, not just soundtrack music. Right. And honestly, Jason, I cheated again. I have a tie, a two-way tie, because I could not pick a favorite between these two. It's a tie between Lapdy Neck from Return of the Jedi, the original Return of the Jedi. I like Jedi Rocks, but I don't like it in the film. And it's a tie between that and the Cantina Band. How can you not love the Cantina Band?
So, Lapdy Neck.
Yeah, see, that's the reason I was so, like, again, I don't dislike Jedi Rocks. I just dislike it, the fact that it doesn't fit at all in Jabba's Palace to me. Lapdy Neck, I mean, again, the way that song begins, it's like, boom. It's like this really kind of like sexy, mysterious, creepy sound that would be being played in a gangster's palace. Not like, ooh, neat.
It's sort of like they decided to take a little bit of, Willie Scott's Anything Goes from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and translate it into Star Wars.
Yeah.
Except with more of a rocker edge.
Right. Yeah. So, but Lapdy Neck is just, it's such a, it's such
disco
a fun,
funky.
It is. It's also a product of the fact that it's obviously from the late 70s, early 80s. It's a product of the time it was made. And
that's probably why they decided to try and replace it.
Yeah, so. But they didn't need to. Don't fix it if it ain't broke, George. I love the Lapdy Neck song because, again, it does. And there was that really cool music video they had for it back in 1983. It's such a fun song, and it's just, again, like, it has that element of sexy, it has this element of mysterious, and this sense of danger almost to it, too. Mm. I don't know what Lapdy Neck means. Like, I mean, I would assume it's probably something in Huttese. I wonder if you know what this means, Jason?
I do not, but I'm sure you could look it up.
Okay, Yeah,
I'm sure there's somebody out there that could translate Lapti Nek from Huttese to English.
Right. For all we know, it means Jar Jar in Huttese. Jar Jar Binks. Jar Jar Binks. There's a new way to think of it, Joe Hogan.
Oh my.
But and then obviously it's an equal tie with the Cantina band. I mean that's what makes the Cantina scene. As soon as, you know, Luke and Obi-Wan walk in, I mean, it's like you just want to like kind of move a little bit. It's right. Very jazzy. It's very club-esque type music. It's very Cantina-esque music.
The funny thing, though, is it's almost out of place in the Tatooine Cantina, but
almost like it's too classy for it.
Right, I know. Yeah. It's almost like it's out of place, but yet it fits that it's out of place.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, to me, it makes sense.
Well, it's like Figger and Dan and the Model Nodes. They just want to play music, and they're real musicians, so they'll take a gig wherever they can.
Right.
Even if it's crazy, crappy Cantina on Mos Eisley. But, you know, it's a fun piece of music. Everybody enjoys this piece of music, except for Chris Smith from the Sarlacc Pit. I remember him saying one time when they did an episode on their music, he said he just can't stand this song.
It's the driving bass in the background.
Yeah.
It drives him nuts.
Yeah. See, and I just love it. I love it because it does. It does. It has like this jazz blues feel to it. And it does. It's far as, again, for being in-universe music, this is easily something that we can have fun and feel ourselves, but at the same time, it's something that's very much other. It's something very much that belongs in our Star Wars galaxy. It fits that scene so perfectly. So, those are my favorite source music. Sorry that I cheated.
well, it's an excuse to talk more about the music.
I figured you wouldn't care.
And honestly, you know, I like Jedi Rocks. I think it works in Return of the Jedi. But then again, I was first exposed to it with the special editions. That was my first exposure to it. So I didn't know anything better until everybody was like, it's not as good as Lapti Nek, you know. So, and I do love Lapti Nek. Lapti Nek is a lot of fun, and it cracks me up.
Dizzy, boom, loop-a-doop. Okay, I don't know these words.
I would love to have an extended version of Jabba's Palace with both songs in it. I think that would be awesome. but anyway,
yeah. Again, except, like Jedi except, Rocks on the soundtrack, I thoroughly enjoy it. Jedi it's Rocks really in that scene in Return of the Jedi. I skip the scene when I'm watching the movie. I can't do it. It doesn't fit to me at all. So yeah. And yep. Musically speaking, I enjoy it. It's so out of place in that scene. So, but that's my opinion.
Right.
I'm glad you like it. And if it was my first exposure, I'm sure I might feel differently. But since I had known Lapti Nek and it did have like a cool feel, and obviously there's some sense of nostalgia there as well, but I think, you know, Jedi Rocks, when I first heard it, I really liked it. I was like, oh, this is really cool. But the more I watched Return of the Jedi, I'm like, this just doesn't fit to me at all. This is not a gangster's palace song. This is like a boy band song for the Star Wars universe. It doesn't fit here. So, you know, Tony Soprano is not going to put his feet up to Quit Playing Games With My Heart. Okay. He's going to put his feet up to something from like Miles Davis or, you know, something like that. Something sexy and scary. So, but
Okay. My favorite source piece, and this is going to come out of left field for everybody. Nobody's going to expect me to pick this because probably nobody remembers that it's source music. But it's going to be Augie's Grand Municipal Band. The parade scene from the end of The Phantom Menace. So, but honestly, I love it. It makes me so happy, and it gets me not pumped up, but it makes me happy, and it, you know, excites me a little bit. And honestly, the drum beats and the horns, and it's all just like big pomp and circumstances. Like, I feel like I'm walking out onto this big giant stage, and that's, you know, I'm this big procession, obviously, you know, which is what it is in the movie, but it's awesome. And the kids choir in it, you know, it all works together, and it's really fun, and it's a lot of fun, and it's a great ending piece of music for
La, da, 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 da.
Yes, yeah. It's great.
It is. But, I love it.
But yeah, so that's my favorite source music, and it was actually between that and the Ewok music at the end of Return of the Jedi. So that's,
yeah. Oh, like the original ending from Return of the Jedi, you mean?
Oh, no, I was thinking the new one. But I was going to search.
I don't think that's – I don't consider that source music because it doesn't sound like that's music they'd play. Oh, mm-hmm. But I guess it is, though. You're right. I mean, they are having a party to music, so.
Right. So I was going to cheat and call it source music.
Okay.
But,
yeah.
But Augie's Grand Municipal Band, the parade, won.
That is a good one. I really enjoy that song. It is. It's exactly like you said. It's fun. And it's youthfully fun, as it should be, for The Phantom Menace is meant to be kind of this youthful, innocent film. And that's like the perfect celebration music for what it's trying to capture.
Exactly.
I think it does that really well. And in a sense, the hero of that film is a character, or the hero of the film is a child. He's a young kid. So you have these young kids then celebrating at the end. It makes sense. It works.
And it's great because right before that we've had a couple of pretty serious kind of scenes because, you know, obviously they've dealt with the Viceroy and Rune Hakko sent them off. You know, Qui-Gon has just died. Obi-Wan has had this sort of intense conversation with Yoda. We've had Qui-Gon's funeral and it's all sad. You know, it's gearing towards the sad part of the movie there, you know, but overall the movie's been pretty happy, so you know, and it's ending, and it's like, well, we got to have something to pick up the energy and get you happy here at the end of the movie, you know, because it is a happy movie. It's a, you know, this is a happy ending. It's not like Revenge of the Sith or Empire Strikes Back, even though Empire Strikes Back is hopeful, it's not a happy ending.
No.
So it has to pick it back up, make it a happy ending, and so you have this big parade with the big, you know, drums and horns and singing and all this fun stuff, and it's just a lot of fun, and it picks the, you know, all the energy back up and gets you excited and happy for the end of the movie. So it's great. So
yeah, I've no disagreement here. I honestly, it would just slip my mind that that's even source music, but I mean, obviously it is. I wouldn't have ever thought of that. So,
right. Right. Everyone, you know, pops into people's head. First thing is, you know, Cantina music or Jabba's Palace as source music. So it's like, not, you know,
most people probably forgot. That wouldn't be very Jason Hunt of me if I picked one of those.
not at all. But we're down to our final category.
Final category, which is our favorite march song. And for me, it's from Episode 4, A New Hope, The Throne Room. I mean, how could it not – well, I don't want to say how could it not be because if it's not, that's fine. But, I mean, to me, this is the perfect march theme. It's my favorite rendition of the Rebel theme as well. I mean, this is a song of victory. This is a song of celebrating victory, and almost to me it has a feeling of courage to it as well, like a feeling of really standing up for what you believe in. There's a lot of great marches in the Star Wars soundtracks. There's a lot of great victory songs in the Star Wars soundtracks, but I think this one captures it the most because it's somewhat, to me, it's very reminiscent of the Force theme. There's that element to it, but it's also very like, oh, that's not it. Wow, Carl. Yeah. Learn to sing the songs you love.
Yes.
But it's very declarative. It's very declarative. And it perfectly plays as they're marching down into the Misasi Temple, and again, it's this. It gives me a feeling of strength and courage. Of that's what it takes to win this war against this powerful empire. It's the standing up for really what you know to be right, and standing up and having the courage to fight that fight. And I think that this theme captures that feeling of what just happened in A New Hope. So that's my favorite march music, and it's great. I mean, still to this day, when I get married someday, God willing. That's the theme. That's the song I want playing as I march into my reception with my wife.
Yes,
I mean, totally want that.
So. Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Yes.
But that was up for my favorite. But actually, I'm going to go with the Droid Invasion March from Phantom Menace. No, actually, I'm not. I'm going to do the throne.
It is good.
It is good, and it's actually, you know, that was something I had actually considered because it's unique, and I was like, well, maybe I'll.
And it's used. Oh. It's used a lot. It's the version of the Imperial theme for the PT.
It is. So. And it's actually, I don't think it gets the recognition that it deserves because it gets played throughout. Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith. It gets played throughout all three of them.
Yeah.
And I think it's really good. But no, that's not my favorite march.
Okay.
I am going to have to go with the throne room scene as well. So I almost threw the droid invasion theme just as a curveball to throw everybody off just to be me. but I can't get away from the throne room scene for reasons that you've already said. It's epic. It's amazing. It's very, you know, declarative and processional, and it's such a definite sense of victory. And I don't really have any other words other than what you've said. And but it's just amazing, and I love it. And if all movies could end with the throne room march, I would be very happy.
Oh, yep, that's true. It's such a great song. So there you go. There's some of our favorite music from Star Wars again. New way of thinking of it. But, you know, hopefully we gave you some different themes to think about, or some different elements of the Star Wars music to think about. Because obviously we love Star Wars music. But yeah,
Jason, you know what I just thought? Once we finish our favorite characters polls, because I think I want to do. We have to do Return of the Jedi, and I think I want to do Clone Wars 2. But after that, we can use some of these categories as our Larian polls.
Yes.
So I think we're going to
do that. Or we can even go through each of the films and say, what's your favorite song from this song movie?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect idea. Good thinking, Jason.
Oh, man. We are kicking on all cylinders.
Oh, yeah. That hyperdrive motivator is working just fine.
I hope you didn't leave the Hydra spanner in the engine again.
So there you go. There's some of our favorite Star Wars stuff. We have another. We're going to continue with our new segment, the Larian Inquiry. And this was a question that somebody wrote into us on Twitter. Jason, you forgot to mention, you didn't send me the name of who it was.
I'm sorry.
You got that? That's okay.
From Benjamin Spears over on Twitter.
Okay.
So he sent this in.
So Benjamin asked a great question. And again, the idea of the Larian Inquiries is, and we encourage you guys to write in, like, kind of like in-universe questions. The question is, did Qui-Gon really follow the will of the Force in freeing Anakin? After all, he did rig that chance cube. So this is a great question.
Yeah.
And what was his name? Was his name Ben again? Sorry.
Benjamin Spears.
Benjamin Spears. So Benjamin, thank you so much for this great question. And it is a really good question. Did Qui-Gon really follow the will of the Force? Especially in light of the fact that he kind of rigs something here. My initial response is, yeah, I think he still did follow the will of the Force. First off, I think the will of the Force is never definitely known. And this is actually something that's talked about in the Revenge of the Sith novel. Again, greatest Star Wars novel, in my opinion. There's a scene in there where Obi-Wan is trying to explain to Padme the will of the Force. And how he kind of talks about it. He goes, it's a form of metaphor. We can never fully know what the will of the Force is. Because ultimately the Force is the mystery. And I think this, theologically, of course, get ready. I think the same is true of the will of God. I mean, we can have a sense of the will of God. We can have a sense of God's will for us individually. But we can never 100%, without a shadow of doubt, know it. Because it's ultimately a mystery. And I think the same is true of the will of the Force. I think Qui-Gon encounters Anakin. And he hears the Force whisper something to him that this child is the chosen one. And also, I don't think Qui-Gon's planning on dying at the end of the movie. I think he does intend to take Anakin under his wing And I think he's plenty competent to train Anakin. Not that Obi-Wan necessarily wasn't, just Qui-Gon has more experience. But yeah, I think Qui-Gon was following the will of the Force. And the whole chance cube thing is, I think that's just Qui-Gon making sure everything – I think he's – what he's doing there is making sure everything else aligns with the will of the Force. I think, you know, he's kind of forcing Watto's hand into becoming part of that will of the Force. So to me, it's something small and simple. You know, it's not huge, because Anakin still had to win the race. It's not like he made Anakin win the race. You know, in the same – like when earlier in the film, Qui-Gon doesn't use the Force to trick Boss Nass into helping the Naboo initially. He knows he can't do that because that's corrupting free will. But then he does use it to at least get away out of there, right? Like, I don't think he has a problem using it in those smaller ways to align with the bigger picture. So I think that's what Qui-Gon's doing there. I think he is indeed following the will of the Force. He has a sense that there's something special about Anakin that he needs to address, that he needs to bring up, and that he wants to follow through on. And this is simply just a small element to make that happen. I think he hears the call from the Force that this is the chosen one, and now he's going to make sure all of his actions make that happen, if that makes sense. So I don't think that's any disruption of the will of the Force. So, but yeah. What do you think?
I'm going to go, you know, basically, you know, the same way, same path that you took. I think, you know, it is the will of the Force. It's the will of, you know, obviously to Qui-Gon, Anakin is the chosen one. He has no doubt in his mind that Anakin is the chosen one. And so he believes it to be the will of the Force to get Anakin out of slavery, to train him as a Jedi. And like you said, Qui-Gon had no idea that he would die at the end of the movie, and that he wouldn't be able to complete Anakin's training and oversee the care for the Chosen One, which I believe was his ultimate goal, you know, getting Obi-Wan, you know, sent out as a Jedi Knight and taking Anakin as his Padawan, was his ultimate goal, because I think that would have been great for Anakin to be trained by Qui-Gon, but side note. But as far as freeing Anakin, I think Qui-Gon would, you know, in addition to Anakin being, you know, the chosen one to Qui-Gon, I think Qui-Gon would see it as the will of the Force to free slaves, if at all possible, just out of principle. And so I think that this is something where Qui-Gon was simply facilitating what he felt the will of the Force was in order to expedite the process. And not, you know, not just sit back and hope that the Force would magically free Anakin on its own, but just sort of prod others into, like you said, prod others into alignment with the will of the Force. Because the Force uses people, and in this case, Qui-Gon was being the vessel for the Force to use. And I think he was, fully convinced that he was following the will of the Force, and I think he was. So, but that's a great question. It's a, you know, you always have to take a step back and question some of these things that, you know, sometimes that are all, you know, considered to be fact. Sometimes it's nice to step back and question and go, well, is this really fact? Is this, you know, is the way we're looking at it, at this, really the way that it should be looked at? And it's nice to take that step back sometimes. So great question. But I think in this sense, yeah, it is the will of the Force. So,
yeah. So thank you, Benjamin, for this great question for us to inquire over. But yeah, good stuff. So Jason, before we go, we do have another matchup to introduce. From,
yes,
given to us from Joe Hogan, which is another really fun one. So I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce that.
Yes. All right. This matchup is going to be between Owen Lars versus Wilro Hood, the ice cream maker man from Empire Strikes Back. So who would win? And do we want to make this like a blaster fight or a fist fight or what? Because
I think a fist fight. Gotta go fist fight.
All right, yeah. We'll make this a fist fight. A fist fight between Owen Lars and Wilro Hood. Who's gonna win? you know, Owen Lars in his prime, not necessarily in A New Hope.
Yes.
Although, no, never mind. I'm going to save my thoughts later for next episode. I'm getting ahead of myself, Carl. So to prevent me from getting ahead of myself, how can people get in touch with us if they want to respond to this matchup or send in a question for the Larian Inquiry or respond to the episode?
Oh, quite simply, Jason, they go to facebook.com/wampuslarpodcast. They can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampuslar. You can send us an email at wampuslarpodcast@gmail.com. And, of course, you can find us in all the other great Star Wars podcasts from the 2nd Airborne Division at starwarsreport.com.
Yes, so indubitably. All right. Well, do we have any final thoughts before we wrap this episode up?
I believe that's all from me.
All right. Final thought from me, I love Star Wars music, and I can't wait to see what John Williams has in store for episode 7.
You had to say that, didn't you? Whole episode we could go do a whole new episode now. I know. I can't wait for episode 7 music. It's going to be awesome.
We get the soundtrack, and you and I are just going to have to do an episode on the new soundtrack.
Exactly.
That's
I can't
it.
Wait.
Okay. Oh, yes.
I bet you that'll be out like early December, too.
Yeah. Yeah,
it'll be out
the week next year. Yeah.
How nuts!
It'll be out the week before the movie.
Yes.
God. Anyways, all right. Well, in that case, thank you everybody for listening to this episode of the Wampus Lair Podcast. We are the Conversation Podcast over at the 2nd Airborne Division of Podcasts on StarWarsReport.com. This has been episode number 87, A Symphony of Favorites. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's lair. Dun dun dun.
Oh, guess what?
What?
Did you hear that?
Yes.
I do.
Yes, I did.
Ooh, stinks.
Serves you right. Stew in your own juices, Carl.
Oh no. Oh no, I need to open a window. Oh no. Alright, sorry. Ah, gross.
Hey, Mario. One second there. I need to open a window.
I need to open a window.